Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Lifelong newspaper reporter Ellen Sweet's unique friendship with renowned Texan civil libertarian Molly Ivins was totally food-centric. Ellen shares her memories of Molly, complete with recipes, in her new book, Stirring It Up with Molly Ivins. Then, just in time for Valentine's Day, Bittersweet Confections' Cheryl Scripter shares tips on working with chocolate. All that sweet talk and more on this week's Louisiana Eats. Bittersweet Confections began in a little booth at the Crescent City Farmers Market. Owner Cheryl Scripter had a terrible time getting the market to believe that she could maintain the quality of her delicate handcrafted sweets during Louisiana's hottest months. But she not only succeeded, she became a glowing example of the small business incubator the market can be for eager entrepreneurs. Cheryl, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you, Poppy.
With chocolate, it really is all about temperature, isn't it?
Completely. And bringing me back to those days of asking the people at the farmer's market for a little spot just really brings it all back to me. Because one of the first things they asked me about was, how in the world are you going to keep your chocolates from spoiling and melting? I said, well, I have an ice chest, and there's something called gel packs, and I'm very careful, and I think I can make it work.
And you did make it work.
Yeah. I mean, there were some tricky days in August that, you know, you put things out and they become soupy. But, you know, of course you don't sell those things. You just put them out for display, and unless someone touches them, then you're good.
And really, in those days, the core of your business were those beautiful truffles. Explain what a truffle is and talk about how you make your truffles.
Yeah, well, that's a real good question because a lot of people get confused about what a truffle is. And the easiest way that I can explain it is that the name does come from the truffle that is grown in France, in Perigord, France, that pigs are trained to dig up. And my truffles are different because, number one, they're chocolate. And number two, they're similar because they're irregularly shaped, like the truffles that you find in France or wherever you're growing them. They are dark in color, and they're rich in flavor. So those are the similarities. And truffles, my truffles are dairy-based, so it's chocolate, it's cream, and it's butter.
Yum. And what are some of the flavors that you incorporate in?
I started doing a regular chocolate. Then I started thinking about some of the different flavors of the city and how we could have some fun with those flavors. So, of course, we do a mocha or a cafe au lait. We do a creme brulee. We do a bananas foster, a pecan. We do a praline. And then we have some fun with spices like we do here in the city. And I introduced an Indian chai, which is a fun flavor. And then we also do a ginger truffle. More so than anything, I was surprised that people really wanted those traditional flavors. As much fun as I have creating the kind of out there flavors, I really found that the core business was keeping it simple because I think people appreciated just the really nice taste of a good piece of chocolate.
What are new trends in chocolate that you're seeing?
Yeah, I actually just came back from New York City. I was in New York City over the weekend, and I went specifically to look for different types of things. You know, it's always fun to see what other people are doing. Of course, I went to Marie Belle, which they have very beautiful designs on their chocolates. I went to a Vosges. Basically, people are still wanting the same things. They want really lovely chocolates. It's all in the presentation. There are lots of different ways to package your chocolates. And I don't know if people really have an appreciation for what goes into the packaging, but it's usually quite extensive and quite expensive, too.
Yes. Now, tempering chocolate is quite an art. Can you give us a little lesson in it?
A quick lesson in tempering chocolate is basically taking your chocolate and looking at it and looking at the directions. I use a couverture chocolate. A couverture chocolate is a chocolate that has at least 32% or higher cocoa butter. Tempering chocolate is just a process. It's used to mold chocolates. It's used to make things like barks. So you're melting it down to about 114 degrees, depending on your chocolate. Look at your box and see. It'll tell you the melting points, the working points, and so forth. My melting point's 114. I use a microwave, 50% power, melt it down, stirring it constantly and doing it in short intervals because you don't want to burn your chocolate. If you put it in your microwave and you start, you know, putting it in and letting it go for a minute, you will burn your chocolate and throw it in the trash. So carefully monitoring it, stirring it, bringing it to the right temperature. And then the way I temper chocolate is I seed it. And what that means is I take chocolate that's already been tempered, have it chopped in little bits, and then start adding it a small amount at a time and incorporating it into the bowl of chocolate. So you're bringing the temperature down.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get it to a point, you can sort of see. I can see without using a thermometer, but it's always nice to have a thermometer at hand. But I can see the chocolate starting to set up, thicken up, starts to get a really nice shine to it. Once it gets to a point, mine's, you know, anywhere from 88 to 90 degrees. You can do a little test. Take a little bit out of the bowl with your finger and sort of wipe it on your countertop, whatever your marble, whatever you're working with. And if it sets up nicely for you within just a few seconds, if your room is the proper temperature, then you'll know you're good to go. And then you can start making molds with it. You can start using it to build showpieces with. Sky's the limit.
Cheryl, how did you make the jump from market vendor to shop owner?
It just sort of happened. I was doing really well at the markets. I was doing like 3 markets a week, and my customers were asking for things that weren't happening on market days, which were like Saturday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And if you weren't available on those days, then you need to find another place to sell your chocolates. So I started thinking about places that I might like to go, and I found a place after the storm near my house in Lakeview and built the kitchen out, and just a very small space, but was there almost 4 years, and began to increase the amount of products that I sold, because just having truffles and just having a few other things doesn't quite pay all your bills, nor does it meet your demand for what your customers are asking you for. So we started doing additional confections, and then the business grew into doing baked goods and cakes, and then the business grew into wedding cakes. Then the business continued to grow. So as the business grew and the customers were asking for things, I just kept growing with it.
Tell us about the pros and cons of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, the pros and cons, I would say it's terrific to always be your own boss. It's a great opportunity that I've had, and I was blessed with that. But I will say that it's also one of those things where you work and you work and you work, and you really don't ever get a day off. My store is open 6 days a week, and then Sunday is the day that I'm supposed to be resting, but it's really not my day of rest. It ends up becoming more my day of catch-all, where if I can run to the store and pick something up during the week that I need, or a day where I can sit in front of the computer and do some research. So I would say that if you're thinking about becoming a business owner, that it is a wonderful opportunity, but you will work harder in your business than you will ever work in anything in your life.
Well, I just love that now you are sort of back where it all started, right there on Magazine Street. Your new location's just spitting distance across the street from that Saturday market.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, I've seen so many nice customers, and of course, all my friends that were my vendors, fellow vendors on Saturday morning. And it's fun to see them all. And now it's nice to say that I can, you know, have my cake and eat it too, because I'm still seeing all my friends, I'm still seeing my customers, but now I'm inside and I can stay open longer and I can come in, you know, a little bit later.
Oh, that's great. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming to talk with us on Louisiana Eats, Cheryl.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
Cheryl Scripter of Bittersweet Confections. Now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what is the name of Leah Chase's celebrated New Orleans restaurant, is Dookie Chase. The restaurant was founded in 1941 and named for Leah's father-in-law, the original Dookie Chase. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
As evidenced by our abundant inbox this past week, people far and wide love them some Leah Chase. But that probably doesn't surprise you very much, does it? Our winner comes from the North Shore, Mandeville to be precise. Congratulations to Laurel McGuire, you've won this week's culinary prize. Send us your answer this coming week.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what is the name of the technique used to get melted chocolate to the right temperature and consistency for candy making? Email your answers to LouisianaEats at WWNO.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what is the name of the technique used to get melted chocolate to the right temperature and consistency for candy making? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at WWNO.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Ellen Sweets and Molly Ivan shared both a love of the printed word and the camaraderie of the kitchen. Most people think of Molly Ivan's as the brash, unabashed civil libertarian, always ready to skewer some unsuspecting political recalcitrant. But Ellen Sweets was one of the lucky few who knew Molly Ivan's, the accomplished cook. She shared her memories of Molly in her new book, Stirring It Up with Molly Ivan's. Ellen, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, thank you, Poppy.
Well, Ellen, tell me, how did you and Molly get to be such great friends?
It's the wildest thing. I had decided to leave corporate America and go back to my journalism roots and make no money. And so I got hired at the Dallas Morning News. So I decided in order to meet people, I had to go where political progressives were. So I got an invitation to come to a dinner that was being moderated by no other than Molly Ivan's. And I thought, oh, my goodness, with any luck, I'll get to meet her. So I went along to this thing by myself, not knowing anyone to invite. And I kept saying, okay, the first person I walk up to, the first person I see, I'm just going to stick my hand out and say, hello, my name is Ellen Sweets. I just moved here, and I don't know a soul. And I walked around the corner of the building, and there was a woman sitting outside putting the finishing touches on a Marlboro light. And I walked up to her, and indeed, I said what I said I was going to say. And she looked up at me, and she said, well, hello there, Ellen Sweets. My name is Molly Ivan's. And I thought, oh, my goodness. How could, I mean, there is a God, okay? And over time, I started going to Austin to hang out with her. And we started cooking together.
So I have to ask you to please tell us the story about that infamous gumbo.
Okay, well, Molly and I are in the kitchen. We decide we're going to have a seafood and sausage gumbo. And we had 3 pounds of onions, bunches of celery, bell pepper, garlic, and she drew the short straw, so she had to chop up the onions. So we're sitting chopping, and Molly has just a mound of onions cut up. She wouldn't use it. She refused to use a food processor. And I look, and there's a little line of pink occurring under the mound of onions. And I thought, did we run out of onions? And is she using a red one? And I said, Molly, why is there pink under that? And she looked up. She said, what? Now, I have to, again, in the interest of full disclosure, Poppy, there was Chardonnay involved in the preparation of this meal. So she looks up, and she looks at her finger, and she looks at the chopping board, and she says, well, I'll just be damned. I sliced my finger open. It was blood. And I said, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We've got all these onions without missing a beat. She hauled this gigantic colander out from under where I was working and said, we're going to do this. She took her entire arm and just swooped them into this huge colander and started running water on it, cold water on it. And she said, rinse it clean, put it in that roux. He'll kill anything left.
That's great. Well, aside from kitchen tales, you also described some pretty wonderful times that y'all spent around Molly's dining room table. Would you talk to us a little bit about that dining room table and her dining style?
She commissioned a local woodworker. I don't even know if he's still here, but he was known for his craftsmanship. And it was made of just gorgeous cherry wood with inlaid Bubinga wood. I'd never heard of Bubinga. It sounded like a strange town in Texas. And, of course, everybody always wanted to know how much that table and chairs set her back. And I do know, but Molly had a thing about money. You know, she couldn't give it away quickly enough. And you might know that for years, she crisscrossed the country and made 2 trips to Alaska to speak to ACLU groups. And when she spoke to the ACLU, she waived her speaking fees. So all the organization had to do was get her to the destination, put her up for a night or two, feed her, and send her home. So she didn't like discussing money. She didn't like people thinking that because she had money, she was any less committed to progressive ideals than she would have been if she hadn't had that kind of money. It was something that I wrestled with putting in the book because I knew everybody wanted to know, but I didn't, and I'm not going to tell you either.
Well, I know that the 5th anniversary of Molly's death has just passed, and would you tell us about her brave fight with breast cancer and maybe how you're still coping with the loss of your great friend?
She was unbelievably brave. Let me tell you one wonderful story. A friend visited her just before she went into hospice, and she had had an adverse reaction to a medication that she was taking, and she had just terrible shingles. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't get comfortable. And he didn't know what to say, and he didn't know what to do. And he said, Molly, is there anything I can get for you? And she turned over and looked at him and said, God, I wish Dick Cheney had these shingles.
Well, okay, now that you have brought up the political topic, I'd be remiss in this year of crazy politics if I didn't ask, what do you think Molly would have to say about Tea Party politics and Mitt and Newt and the crew?
I cannot tell you how many times I have heard people say, oh, don't you miss Molly's voice now. Molly was very, very concerned for as long as I knew her about the increasingly nasty tone that societal discourse was taking in general, and the decreasing civility just in saying please and thank you. Notice it. Notice it the next time you hold the door open for someone. Notice whether or not they say thank you to you. And I know that you're in the South, and I know that you're polite, but notice it. Notice whether or not when you're trying to get out of a service station lot, notice how many people stop and let you out. And these are the little things that I think mark how we treat one another. And this is a very big thing with her. Not whether or not you were a Republican or a Democrat, not whether or not you were conservative or liberal, because she had friends who were, in fact, conservative and Republican. But she took people as they came on an individual case-by-case basis.
Well, I'm going to lead by example and say thank you, Ellen Sweets, for taking this time to talk with us today and for giving the world your wonderful book, Stirring It Up with Molly Ivins.
And I thank you, Poppy, for giving me this opportunity.
Ellen Sweets, author of Stirring It Up with Molly Ivins.
Here's to Molly Ivins, a hero of our time. Even though we never met, you were a friend of mine. Here's to Molly Ivins, and though your race is run, you stuck it to the right wing, and you made it seem like fun.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, New Orleans' own Brian Batt with Mardi Gras memories.
Because when you're small, when you're a little kid, everything is huge and massive. And I remember in the children's ball when I was a little page going out into the municipal auditorium thinking, oh my gosh, this is humongous. And then I hadn't been to one in years since, you know, I was in college, and coming back and going to a ball and going, oh my gosh, it's totally different.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Lights Eagan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.